You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 7 July. U.S. trade balance data due later this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Jimmy Moyoha, I want to touch on Clicks. It is the cheapest it's been in a decade, even longer. The PE is half the last decade's mean. Dividend yield is best since 2009. Value here, or I don't know, maybe there's a changing of the guard. Then we're chatting with Eric Levenstein. He is from Worksman's Attorneys. The Marion Roberts and Group 5 business rescue processes, they are both over. They have been largely successfully concluded. And what does this mean for the broader business rescue process? And then we're chatting with debt source, risk of elevated rates to the business landscape. We always talk around debt, we talk around rates in terms of individuals, consumers, but of course impacts business as well. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Employers owe 8.3 billion rand in pension contributions. This according to the FSCA. This affects over 500,000 members. Business Day, business leaders and Eskom board clash over transmission assets. The short answer is we need to just unbundle it out. That's what the president said all the way back in his State of the Nation in February. Morning markets, US is green, S&P 0.7% higher, NASDAQ 1.25% better. The East is mostly red. We've got Sydney down 0.33%, Tokyo 1.25% lower, Hong Kong 0.5% down, and Tencent the green up 3.4%. Commodities also mostly red, gold futures 4,143, Brent is the green, 7268. Platinum 1628. Palladium 1265. The Rand is 1623. Bitcoin 63,200. And top 40 opening call, green open, but 100 points, 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. Clicks, a stock that for pretty much, I don't know, for all of my life, been an expensive stock. A good quality, lack of results, good management, expensive. Now suddenly, price down 36% in a year, dividend back at levels last seen 2009, dividend yield, PE 16.5, the 10-year mean 30.6. Is this a changing of the guard? Is this a, I don't know, once-in-a-decade opportunity to buy a stock? I hate the once-in-a-decade theories, but maybe it is.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I think the better question that you're looking to answer here is, do I buy Clicks or do I buy Dis-Chem? Because if we're looking at our market, that those are the only two sort of real pure pharmaceutical plays that are listed. And I suppose that's how you're comparing your investments. I mean, if you're looking at Clicks in isolation and you're looking at just those numbers and the stats that you mentioned alone, then the investment case is a no-brainer. It's a deeply discounted share price, has more than 1,000 stores across with 700 and almost 800 pharmacies across the country, with the expectation to keep opening more on an annual basis, and you're getting a good return on investment in terms of the performance of that business. It's smoothed out quite nicely and has matured very nicely as a business. If you're looking at that in isolation, that is the business case. It's an easy decision to make. That's what we look for as value investors. The real question around whether or not you're going for Clicks versus Dis-Chem then speaks to the different types of investment that you're looking at. Because if you're looking at Clicks, you're looking at the traditional, I suppose, what we'd call the boring investment, the stable investment, the predictable investment, where consistency and growth become more of a priority than chasing the higher peaks and avoiding the lower troughs, which you might have with a company like Dis-Chem that is still growing quite aggressively and looking to continue their expansion in a very different light. So again, in isolation, your answer is very clear. If you're looking at comparing this to another business that sits in the same space, that operates in the same manner, then you have different questions to be asking around whether or not you want to be taking the investment risk that comes with potentially looking at how Dis-Chem is approaching their business versus how Clix is approaching theirs. And that's where you then start to answer the question around the change of guard. Because if you look at the chief executive officers of both businesses, they are very different in terms of how it is that they lead their businesses and their teams. Bettina Engelbrecht at Clix and Rui Moraes at Dis-Chem are fundamentally looking at the market from very different perspectives. I've had the privilege of speaking to both of them. And when you speak to both of them, they're looking at the market and looking at operations from two very different lenses, and that's driving two very different strategies that are playing out in the market.
I get your point around that, and I do get. I mean, I suppose it is seldom a binary. If I'm buying something, it's a quick last question. It's always a case of I could buy this, but what else? Because there's almost an infinite number of companies, and there's very clearly a finite amount of money in my little portfolio.
Absolutely. And if you're looking at the share prices as well, Clix's share price trades north of 200 Rand a share, whilst Dis-Chem's is still sub 100 Rand a share. And for investors that are looking at getting that return that might not have the capital to dispose, or that have made that finite decision to say, I've only got 1,000 Rand to allocate to a pharmaceutical play, which do I go with? For them, they might then say, okay, well, the Dis-Chem share price is trading cheaper. They're outperforming Clix in some respects at the moment. So therefore, that's a better decision for me to make at this particular juncture. I guess if you're looking at the two companies, your investment cases are going to be, or your decisions are going to be potentially a little different in terms of how you decide between the two companies. But to answer your question, Si, around whether or not there's still an investment case for Clix at these levels, I find it very difficult to believe that there isn't, just simply considering the numbers that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is. I mean, it's the cheapest it's been in potentially 15 years. Simple metrics, I take the point on that. But nonetheless, we'll leave it there. Jimmy Muyaha, always appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today on LinkedIn is just that. Good time to be buying. Jimmy makes a good point. Maybe it's not about Clix. Maybe it's about Clix or Dis-Chem. But certainly we have a cheap Clix. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Eric Liebenstein. He's director and head of the Insolvency and Business Rescue Department at Worksman's Attorneys. Eric, appreciate the time. Two significant milestones in the local business rescue landscape. Marian Roberts, they did a deal with a Differential Capital. They've secured 2,600 odd jobs. Group 5, finally done. Not only did it pay back creditors, it even perhaps had some return for shareholders. These are two big milestones, in particular because these are also big numbers.
Absolutely, and I think it's a fairly large step forward for the business rescue process in South Africa, Simon. You know, when you look at stats, South Africa, in the last 6 months, in 2026, you've had over 1,000 companies go into liquidation. And just in May, 225 companies being placed into liquidation. So this kind of story is good news. I think it's good news for our legislation. It certainly places South Africa in line with what we see internationally when it comes to restructuring processes. And, you know, Marian Roberts, Group 5 household names, certainly been restructured in a very positive way, with most importantly, job preservation across the board, both in South Africa and offshore. And what is really interesting about Marian Roberts is that Differential Capital, you know, came along, looked at this quite carefully, and went straight in after the business rescue process had commenced, negotiated with the practitioners, and made a significant purchase, just over R1 billion, to acquire companies not just in South Africa, but Canada, Australia, Portugal, Chile. And you know, it really is what they call distressed M&A at its highest form. So it's, as far as Marian Roberts is concerned, a really good outcome. And similarly in Group 5, also a household name. Yeah. I mean, this company has been in business rescue since March 2019. Again, a good outcome for creditors and for employees.
And it tells us that the business rescue process, in part because of the size of these deals, is fundamentally working. Now, to be clear, no company or shareholder wants to see their company go into business rescue. And oftentimes, business aren't rescuable. But in these two cases, absolutely were. And it shows, I don't know, a level of maturity, a level of sophistication for our process.
Yeah, I mean, companies are financially distressed from time to time worldwide. Yeah. It's not something unique to South Africa. The question is simply, do we use our local legislation effectively and where there are good outcomes? And of course, if you leave the process too late, there's going to be nothing left to rescue. And I think in both these examples of Group 5 and Murray & Roberts, the practitioners got in early enough to secure proper outcomes with proper value and rather avert the negative outcome of liquidation, which is really the end of the company's life and not good for the South African economy and certainly not good for the workers who are involved in these outcomes. So we like to speak at Worksmans at my firm about these notable successes, because if we don't talk about the upside of rescue, no one else will. And I think it's about time people understand that the outcome is both the ability to restructuring a company, place it back on its feet on a solvent basis, or alternatively, the success is delivering a better return to creditors than they would have received in liquidation. And once our market establishes that as an outcome and a positive outcome, we can only see more of these transactions happening, Simon, going forward.
And that's perhaps the key point. And you kind of answered it. You say that often, I suspect, left too late. And I can see as a board, as a CEO, you don't want to make that phone call. I absolutely get it. But I was going to say, well, what are some of the lessons? And one of those lessons perhaps is sooner rather than later, so that there is something left to be rescued, even though it's the last call you ever want to make as a board or a CEO.
Absolutely. No one wants to put up their hands and admit failure. And I think in particularly small family-owned companies or private companies where the company's been inherited through generations, no one's going to say, look, it's my fault. The company's about to go insolvent. But the longer you leave it, there is going to be a much more difficult curve to try and meet when it comes to restructuring the company, dealing with very upset creditors, dealing with a workforce that are halfway out the door. So it is about getting in early, and it's about directing appreciating the option of a rescue and not just throwing their hands up and saying it'll be better tomorrow when we wake up and continue trading in an insolvent position, which is not good.
Yeah, absolutely. We see few of this size. Is that because they're happening, but perhaps I'm just not noticing them? What is perhaps some of the reason behind the success of these at scale, but perhaps less of them?
So, Simon, if you go back, you know, you must remember the Edcon business rescue some years ago ended up with Retailability buying out a lot of the Edcon businesses, albeit on a smaller footprint across South Africa. And I think TFG bought Jet Stores, and those stores continue to trade very profitably for those companies. And again, you know, South African Airways, yes, it's been through a restructuring, it's been through a rescue. It continues to fly, you know, even though there are, you know, constraints in respect of making profits out of airlines. These companies exited from rescue in a very good way. And likewise, these two companies, both in the construction sector, have exited with people that have seen value. I mean, Differential Capital, as I said earlier, spent over R1 billion in acquiring these companies worldwide. So there are opportunities for cash flush investors that have cash on its balance sheet and where they can identify good opportunities, particularly in the distressed space.
Yeah, and I take your point. Edcon, SAA, they'd both left my head, but they were obviously, as you say, they were really, really big at the time, and both relatively recent as well. We'll leave it there. That's Eric Liebenstein. He's Director and Head of the Insolvency and Business Rescue Department. Worksmans Attorneys, appreciate the time.
Give your money smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Training now with Frank Knight, CEO of Debt Source. Frank, appreciate the early morning time. We talk a lot around interest rates. We talk a lot around the impact of that. But we always tend to focus it on the consumer, on the person in the street, the person with a bond, the person with a credit card. We kind of forget that actually interest rates obviously have significant impact on businesses, on companies, working capital, expansion, you know, just ability to buy new equipment. There's a real direct impact to business as rates go higher, or as the case is at times lower, but at the moment we're talking about a higher process.
Yes, good morning, Simon, and that's absolutely the case. The lesser known story is definitely about the trade credit aspect, the commercial side of it, where companies really struggle the moment interest rates go up. I must tell you, in our own delinquency ratio, and this has been proved through studies right throughout the world, there's a massive correlation between interest rate increases and increases in business failures. You know, almost all these businesses run overdraft facilities or have financing facilities, first-tier, second-tier market. And so the moment those interest rates increase, then you see definite additional business pressure, and you also see an increase in business failures.
And there's an important point. I mean, as soon as rates go up, there's an increase in cost to that business. The interest rate goes up. So immediately there's an impact. But there's that other side of the coin, which is, you know, for example, you mentioned the steel sector. Rates go up. A steel producer suddenly finds that their customers all have less demand. There's less demand more broadly in the economy. So you get squeezed from two directions. Costs are higher, potentially revenue lower.
That's absolutely correct, Simon. I mean, for me, if we can couple the construction and the steel industry perhaps together, then you've got this double whammy where demand slows down, costs are busy going up. And in addition to that, what you have is the perception of future increases in interest rate also further lessens demand. In other words, it's very unlikely for a consumer to want to build a house if they perceive that the interest rates are going to go up. And that's why, you know, kind of very stable monetary policy is like so important, you know, that you don't have wild swings and stuff, simply because of that perception of future. And, you know, companies invest based on that perception. Mm-hmm. Companies invest based on what they think the future is going to hold for them. And if that view is that interest rates are going to go up dramatically, then obviously they don't invest. Steel industry, big one, you know, you see a definite slowdown in those big infrastructure projects. You see obviously the cost of those infrastructure projects. So higher interest rates are definitely not what business owners want.
And there is that sort of a trigger effect. I'm thinking sort of residential. So rates go up, so we're going to see residential property demand slowing, which means we're going to see less new housing developments, which then obviously goes into the construction sector and goes into that steel sector. There is a very long tail of ripple impact.
There's a very long tail of ripple impact, and not only the ripple impact, but then there's also the ripple impact of increased business failures. So our own delinquency rate, which we measure quite carefully, and the sample size is like large enough. We talk about, you know, 70, 80,000 companies that we review on an annual basis. We've seen increases already in that delinquency rate. So we measure it much earlier than business rescue and liquidation. Mm-hmm. We measure it when the company goes into legal. Mm-hmm. And we've seen increases of 20% already year on year, you know, just based on high interest rates and kind of worse sentiment generally going on in the market.
Which suggests that the impact is really, really quick. I mean, we get the rate increase, and I suppose it comes to the fair reality. The MPC raises rates, the bank pushes up the interest rate. Your month-end payment is higher. There's an immediate follow-through. There's no lag.
Yes, Simon, of course, interest rates are not the only factor that influence those delinquency ratios. There are other factors, sentiment being one of them, you know, supply chain issues, you know, obviously oil, I mean, all of that stuff. I mean, if you take the agri industry, for instance, those poor farmers have got much higher input costs because of the prices of diesel. Yeah. And then on top of that, they've also got much higher input costs because the prices of fertilizer, et cetera, especially, are going up even higher. So you can imagine the impact of that. And then in some places, you know, they still have El Nino to worry about, et cetera. Yeah, so you've definitely got a massive impact on those business sectors as well. So generally those interest rate hikes coupled with negative business sentiment, you know, doesn't help us get beyond 1% growth per annum.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. You're being squeezed from everywhere, and hence, as you say, we struggle at that 1% GDP. We'll leave it there. That's Frank Knight, CEO, DebtSource. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday. He, of course, Sanlam Private Wealth. We're talking around Japan. Currency, 40-year lows. Bond, 30-year highs. Market, all-time highs. A mixed bag. We asked if it was worth investing. 40% of you, just over 40%, said no, currency risks. The rest of you were split between, buying the ETF, and some of you, looking great, buying individual
stocks. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, Altron Digital Businesses.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.